Blog Talk Radio.
Way. There are more people in prisons and jails today just for drug offenses than were incarcerated for all reasons in 1980. Now, most Americans violate drug laws in their lifetime. Most do. You don't have to raise your hand. Most do. But the enemy in this war has been racially defined. Even though studies have now consistently shown for decades that, contrary to popular belief, people of color are no more likely to use or sell illegal drugs than whites, this drug war has been waged almost exclusively on black and brown communities. In fact, where significant differences in the data can be found, it frequently suggests that white youth are more likely to engage in illegal drug use, drug abuse, and drug dealing than black youth. But that's not what you would guess by taking a peek inside our nation's prisons and jails, which are overflowing with black and brown drug offenders. Human Rights Watch reported at the peak of the drug war that in some states, 80 to 90% of all drug offenders sent to prison were one race, African American. Now, I find that many people, when they see this data, they say, oh, you know, that's a shame, that's a shame. But, you know, we need a war on them in the hood. Because that's where the violent offenders can be found. That's where the drug kingpins can be found. But what many people don't realize is this drug war has never been focused primarily on rooting out the violent offenders or the drug kingpins. Federal funding in this war has flowed to those state and local law enforcement agencies that boost the sheer numbers of drug arrests. It's been a numbers game. Law enforcement agencies have been rewarded in cash by the millions for the sheer numbers of people swept in for drug offenses, virtually guaranteeing that law enforcement goes out looking for the so-called low-hanging fruit, stopping, frisking, searching as many people as possible to get their numbers up. And federal drug forfeiture laws allow state and local law enforcement agencies to keep for their own use up to 80% of the cash, cars, homes seized from suspected drug offenders. You don't have to be convicted, just suspected of a drug offense. And law enforcement can seize the cash out of your pocket, out of your home, take your car, sell it, keep the proceeds, thus giving law enforcement a direct monetary interest, not in ending drug abuse or drug addiction or drug-related harm, but in the longevity of this war itself. And the U.S. Supreme Court, far from resisting the rise of mass incarceration and the targeting of poor communities of color, far from resisting it, it has facilitated the drug war at every turn. The U.S. Supreme Court has eviscerated Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures, giving the police license to stop, frisk, search just about anyone, anywhere, without a shred of evidence of any criminal activity, as long as they get consent, which is really just compliance. And for those who want to challenge the bias that is on full display in the drug war, the U.S. Supreme Court has closed the courthouse doors. The cases that I was bringing challenging patterns and practices of profiling by the police can't even be filed in a court of law today. In a series of cases beginning with McCleskey versus Kemp and Armstrong versus the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled explicitly that it does not matter how overwhelming your statistical evidence is. It does not matter how severe the racial disparities are. Unless you have proof of conscious intentional bias, tantamount to an admission by a law enforcement official of bias, you can't even state a claim for race discrimination in the criminal justice system today. In this way, the U.S. Supreme Court has effectively immunized the system of mass incarceration from judicial scrutiny for racial bias, much in the same way that it slavery and Jim Crow and their days. But of course, being swept into this system at a young age with little hope of challenging the tactics or the bias that got you there is just the beginning of the odyssey for so many. Because once you're swept in, you're ushered into a parallel social universe in which the basic civil and human rights that apply to others no longer apply to you. For the rest of your life, you've got to check that box on employment applications asking the dreaded question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Doesn't matter how long ago that felony may have occurred, months ago, weeks ago, or 35 years ago. For the rest of your life, you've got to check that box, knowing full well your application's going straight to the trash. Housing discrimination perfectly legal by public landlords and private housing landlords and officials. Public benefits are off limits to people who have been convicted of felonies, like food stamps. Under federal law, you can't even get food stamps if you've been convicted of a felony. What are people released from prison supposed to do? Can't get a job, barred from public housing, private housing, even food stamps may be off limits to you? Well, apparently what we expect them to do is to pay hundreds or thousands of dollars in fees, fines, court costs, accumulate back child support. And paying back all these fees, fines, and court costs can be a condition of your probation or parole. And then get this, if you're one of the lucky few who actually manages to get a job following release from prison, up to 100% of your wages can be garnished to pay back all those fees, fines, court costs, and accumulated back child support. What do we expect folks released from prison to do? I say when we take a step back and view the system as a whole, how it operates practically from cradle to grave in some communities, you have to ask yourself, what does it seem designed to do? Seems designed, in my view, to keep sending folks right back to prison. And that is what, in fact, happens the vast majority of time. About 70% of people released from prisons nationwide return within a few years, and the majority of those who return in some states do so in a matter of months because the challenges of mere survival on the outside are so immense. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, my own view is that nothing short of a major social movement has any hope of ending mass incarceration in the United States. And if you imagine that surely something less could do, somehow we could tinker with this machine and get it right, consider the sheer scale of the system. If we were to return to the rates of incarceration we had in the 1970s, before the war on drugs and the Get Tough movement kicked off, we would have to release 4 out of 5 people who are in prison today. 4 out of 5. More than 1 million people employed by the criminal justice system would need to find a new line of work. Private prison companies now listed on the New York Stock Exchange and doing quite well even during times of economic recession, those companies would be forced into bankruptcy. This system is now so deeply rooted in our social, political, and economic structure, it's not going to just fade away or downsize out of sight without a major upheaval, a fairly radical shift in our public consciousness. Now, I know that there's many people today who will say, well, there's just no hope of ending mass incarceration in America. Just as many people were resigned to the old Jim Crow in the South would say, oh, yeah, it's a shame, but that's just the way that it is. I find that so many people of all colors view the millions cycling in and out of our prisons and jails as just an unfortunate but basically inalterable fact of American life. Well, I am confident that Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks and Ella Baker and Ann Braden and all those young people who risked their lives getting on buses and taking freedom rides through the South to end the old Jim Crow, they would not be so easily deterred. So I believe we have got to pick up where they left off and do the hard work of movement building on behalf of poor people of all colors. In 1968, Dr. King told advocates that the time had come to shift from a civil rights movement to a human rights movement. Meaningful equality, he said, could not be achieved through civil rights alone. Without basic human rights, the right to work, the right to a quality education, the right to housing, without basic human rights, he said, civil rights are an empty promise. So in honor of Dr. King and all those who labored to end earlier systems of racial and social control, I hope we will commit ourselves to building a human rights movement to end mass incarceration, a movement for education, not incarceration, a movement for jobs, not jails, and a movement to end all those forms of legal discrimination against people released from prison, discrimination denying them basic human rights to work, to shelter, and to food. But before this movement can truly get underway, a great awakening is required. We've got to awaken from this colorblind slumber we've been in to the realities of race in America. And we've got to be willing to embrace those labeled criminals. Not necessarily all their behavior, but them, their humanness. For it has been the refusal and failure to recognize the dignity and humanity of all people. It has been the sturdy foundation for every caste-like system that has ever existed in the United States or anywhere else in the world. It's our task, I firmly believe, to end not just mass incarceration, not just the war on drugs, but to end this history and cycle of creating caste-like systems in America. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Yeah. table off.
Hey, bring him something to drink.
Yeah,
the motherfucker crazy wants to do.
So what?
Shit on this motherfucker.
Oh, shit. What the fuck is this? Hey, motherfuckers. Welcome back to the $20 Sack Pyramid. I'm your host, motherfucking OG Henny Lowe. And we're back with our two final contestants. Duck, motherfucking mouth, and Bootney Lee Farnsworth. They'll be playing for a $20 sack of Endo and a $35 gift certificate to the Compton Swap Meet. All right, y'all bitches got 30 seconds to answer five motherfucking questions. Blimey, you ready with that clock? Well, let the games begin.
All right, man. We got to do this shit, man.
Hell yeah, man.
We got to do this shit right now. Okay, you ready?
Hell yeah, man.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, go. Endo, Cavi, Voda.
Should I just say it or